KALW.
Public housing in San Francisco is in the middle of a huge transition. Because of a trend toward federal budget cuts, local housing authorities have been scrambling for solutions and money for their decaying public housing. More than a decade ago, San Francisco rolled out a program called Hope SF to redevelop four of the city's public housing sites without displacing any residents. The plan? To build phase by phase, moving residents into new buildings, demolishing the old housing, then building higher density mixed income housing in its place. Reporter Magnolia McKay has that story.
All right, and it's all one bundle of garbage.
Harold Davis is packing. He's getting ready for his move into 1101 Connecticut, a brand new building, and the first in the Potrero Hill redevelopment.
No way, not those two. The shoes and the needles, those are garbage.
There's a crew of movers here to help him, paid for by a government subsidy. Davis moved into Potrero Hills public housing in 2007. He's originally from Alabama, but said he came to California to be with family and to try a different way of life.
Once I was here, I thought the city itself was beautiful.
He was struggling to find suitable work because of a back injury and his legal blindness. When his family couldn't host him anymore, he had to go to a homeless shelter. Eventually, he landed in one of the 61 buildings that dot the hillside in Potrero Terrace and Annex. They look like old army barracks.
I knew this was a public housing unit. I didn't really know anyone over here, so I tended to stay to myself.
The movers put things in boxes and carry out the big stuff. Davis has to tell them what stays and what goes.
Okay, not stick this anywhere. Okay, I don't know why they did that. That's bad luck. Bad luck.
What is bad luck?
Put a hat on your bed. You're supposed to take a hat off when you come in the house. My grandfather would—he killed me if he said right now. But no, it's bad luck to put a hat on the bed.
Why? I've never heard that before.
Girl, I don't know. I'm just telling you it is now. That's what they told me.
All right.
That's what they told me, Maggie, when I was younger. And I have enough bad luck, Maggie. I don't know if it's true or not, but I don't need no more bad luck.
Davis told me he's receiving regular radiation treatment for prostate cancer. And there's the move. He takes a break from packing and steps outside for a cigarette.
You know, I imagine there would be people that would be excited about this. I'm not excited about this. I'm just doing what I gotta do because I don't have any other choice or any say-so in the matter.
He walks me to his neighbor's door. Lisa Gant is also moving into 1101, but she's more optimistic than Davis.
I feel great. I'm glad we finally move in.
She told me she didn't get to pick out her apartment and won't have a view.
So that's the only downfall about my situation. Yeah, but other than that, I'm happy that we're moving.
They were both picked in a lottery to go into the new building, 1101 Connecticut. Everyone on this block is moving, either into the new building or into one of the existing public housing units. For years, this part of the hill has seen a constant stream of contractors surveying the steep hillside, planning new infrastructure, and talking to residents about their future homes. The city chose nonprofit developer Bridge Housing Corporation to redevelop Potrero Hills public housing.
In certain ways, I feel like it's a setup. It's a move to set people up to fail, and then I can get you out, and then that I'm a private owner, and I have this beautiful view on this hill and all of this convenience, I can get you out, and I can get other people in here that's got big money, and dun-dun-dun-dun.
The north side of Potrero Hill has million-dollar homes, nice restaurants, and shops. But the south side is another story. The streets are curved to follow the hilly landscape, which isolates residents from the rest of the neighborhood's grid. There's less access to parks, and it's a food desert. The closest supermarket is a Whole Foods on the other side of the hill, whose prices aren't realistic for these residents. The developer held monthly meetings to get community input on some things. In these meetings, residents asked for more educational opportunities, job training, safety, choice, and a feeling of dignity and ownership in their own community. But what's built comes down to budget. Harold Davis says he wished residents had a bigger say in the design of the new building and who's moving into it.
I just don't think that there's a lot of fairness and thought given to the residents situations over here. It's if like we're not individuals. It's like we're all the same, so throw them all in the pot and cook them all up the same way.
It's not surprising that residents like Davis are suspicious of this plan. San Francisco doesn't have the best track record when it comes to taking care of its public housing residents. I'll tell you more about that history in a minute. But first, Public Housing 101. The federal government created publicly owned and operated housing during the Great Depression to provide low-income families with decent living conditions. But it was actually pretty hands-off, entrusting local housing authorities to build and manage these low-income properties. The bulk of San Francisco's public housing stock was built as temporary housing for war workers in the 1940s.
An American way that will mean a decent house for every worker in America in which to live.
Public housing residents pay rent and make maintenance calls to the San Francisco Housing Authority. That's about to change for Harold Davis.
I was under the impression that it would be still under San Francisco Housing Authority. But here just recently, I found out now we will be going under a private owner.
That's right. This public housing is going to be privately owned. Which begs the question, is this still public housing? Technically, no. But practically, kind of. I asked Theo Miller, director of HOPE-SF, the public-private partnership leading this project. He tells me what the late Mayor Ed Lee used to say.
We're ending public housing. No more public housing in San Francisco. We're all San Franciscans.
1101 Connecticut and all future buildings in Potrero's rebuild are owned and operated by the developer, Bridge, but the land underneath is still owned by the San Francisco Housing Authority. This ground lease keeps the buildings under government oversight and ensures that these residents get government money to help with rent. But how will things change for residents like Davis when a developer is the landlord?
Now we will have to do the annual review with Bridge as well as housing.
Every year, residents go down to the property office, bringing all of their documents with them. IRS, Social Security, proof of whatever income or benefits they receive. Kind of like when you sign a lease for an apartment, except public housing residents have to do it every year. And they have to prove they don't make too much instead of proving they make enough. So now he'll have to do this with two authorities, the private developer that built his apartment and the government agency overseeing it. San Francisco has been trending toward private developers in public housing for years. One prominent example, HOPE 6, the public-private partnership that stretched through the 90s and early 2000s. Politicians and the building community were excited about HOPE 6, but people in the African-American and housing rights communities were not.
We tore down 300 units of housing and only built 200. We made a lot of mistakes and we moved so many of the people that I grew up with out of San Francisco.
That's Mayor London Breed. She grew up in the city's public housing. Her housing project in the Fillmore was one of the sites that badly needed redevelopment.
Don't get me started on the mold and the pipes and the roaches and the drama and everything that existed and calling a number.
Five sites had the HOPE 6 makeover in the early 2000s. The buildings were good, but HOPE 6 built fewer units than they demolished, and many residents were permanently displaced. This happened at the same time as the dot-com boom and contributed to San Francisco's loss of 3,000 black households in that era. When federal grants for these redevelopments ran dry, the city stepped in to help save the remaining public housing stock.
I believe we can rebuild hope in our city.
That's Gavin Newsom in 2006.
That's why we are initiating HOPE-SF, an effort to rebuild our most distressed housing authority properties into mixed-use and mixed-income communities, creating more low-income housing, more middle-income housing, and more housing generally overall.
Newsom was early in his mayorship of San Francisco when he launched HOPE-SF. It would give these decaying sites to nonprofit developers to rebuild, as long as they ensured that there was one-for-one replacement of all public housing units. The developers would recoup their building expenses by creating denser housing and selling some land off at market rate, creating a mixed-income community. These projects also rely on local housing bonds. There are four HOPE-SF sites. Potrero Hill is the third to be rebuilt.
HOPE-SF is designed according to really rigorous non-displacement principles.
Again, HOPE-SF's director, Theo Miller.
The HOPE-SF neighborhoods that we're in the process of transforming will be rebuilt one for one in terms of public housing, but we're also increasing the supply of affordable housing and integrating market rate housing on the sites.
This will nearly triple the amount of housing units on this land. All the current public housing residents are guaranteed new housing, like 1101 Connecticut. Roughly another third of the new development will be affordable housing for people making up to $50,000 a year. And the final third will be sold off at market rate. The redevelopment plans include homes for sale, but none below market rate. The idea of putting people with differing incomes in the same place to create a thriving mixed-income community has been here in San Francisco since the 60s.
Instead of more institutionalized housing, a mixture of low and medium-cost dwellings could make Hunter's Point not a ghetto, but a desirable neighborhood where people of different backgrounds and incomes will wish to live.
But Hunter's Point remained notorious for violence and poverty. In Potrero, it will be another 2 years before the next building goes up. But first comes a celebration for the completion of Phase 1. The atmosphere at 1101's ribbon-cutting ceremony is lively. Mayor Breed does the honors.
This is what I do for a living. All right, let's do this!
Five,
four,
three,
two, one! This is honestly really a dream come true for me. I think about my family, I think about my friends who aren't with us here today and the conditions that we suffered through. And I am so hopeful because now, as a result of this work that so many of you have contributed to making this dream a reality, the next generation of young people growing up in public housing will have a completely different experience. And that's what gets me excited.
Officials, residents, and community members each take a turn at the podium. Lifelong Potrero Hill resident Trevon Hunter gives the opening blessing.
Continue to bless the space that these new residents reside in. May you continue to put your...
After the ceremony, there's music and food catered by a high-end butcher. Soon after the ceremony, I catch up with Hunter. She takes me to her office, located in one of Potrero Hill's community centers. Actually, her husband dropped us off there because she told me it would be too dangerous to walk.
You've been here before?
I haven't. So this is your office?
Yeah, one of the YCB.
Her office is in the same barrack-style building as the public housing in the neighborhood. It's a bare-bones room with a metal desk and creaky old office chairs. From her window, there's a view of a neighborhood childcare center. Hunter is the founder and director of Stand in Peace International, an organization that promotes healing in communities affected by trauma.
I do healing circles, I do peace walks. You know, people that have lost ones that have been lost to violence, that's where some of the healing circles come from.
Potrero Hill has a high crime rate, especially around the housing projects. Hunter doesn't live in public housing, but this has always been her community.
Potrero Hill Gym is where I learned how to play basketball.
And she has history here. She told me her grandparents moved here in the 1940s.
My grandmother had a fourth grade education, was a paraprofessional until she retired. She lived in public housing until one of her children moved her out of public housing when she was too old to live there by herself.
Hunter is one of the community members who has voiced concern about the Hope SF plan in Potrero Hill. She and I speak for an hour, and there's one phrase she keeps coming back to.
Blatant disregard for the actual people that live in the public housing.
Hope SF says their goal is to change whole systems so that race and place are not barriers to prosperity and opportunity. But Hunter is skeptical.
Everybody's acting as if 1101 is the savior for the people, but the reality is if they're not addressing the equitable situations or the historical genocide, is what I call it, of African Americans in San Francisco, it's really not being honest and authentic with the real work that needs to happen for the people.
The story of public housing in San Francisco is intrinsically linked to the city's African-American population. During World War II, there was a huge migration of Southern African-Americans into the city, and most of them worked in the shipbuilding industry. Redlining and racially restrictive housing covenants limited Black families' housing options, so they settled in places like the Bayview and the Fillmore. In the 1940s and 50s, jazz clubs and theaters made the Fillmore district famous as the Harlem of the West. People like Charlie Parker and Ella Fitzgerald frequently played. The neighborhood was filled with Black-owned businesses and homes. But the urban renewal movement was sweeping the nation. The government used eminent domain to clear housing that they considered blighted and demolished thousands of homes and businesses to make way for Geary Boulevard. The community rallied and protested, like this Black business owner speaking to the media in 1968.
This must stop. we are going to make some moves, some demand, to retake our black business, retake our black land.
But in the end, the redevelopment displaced thousands of African-American residents. Many of those who stayed in the city were pushed into public housing sites. The black population in San Francisco has been on the decline ever since. Because of the displacement in the Fillmore and the redevelopments of the 90s and early 2000s, many people in the African-American community are distrustful of the city's housing efforts. While it's true that the old buildings on Potrero Hill are overdue for remodeling, it's also true that the land they're built on is very valuable. Again, Siobhan Hunter.
And like literally, this whole side is, at the end of the day, will all be market rate. You get the water views, you got the skyline, you got the bridge.
The redevelopment plans do show the market rate housing will be built on hills with unobstructed views. Neighborhood advocates like Hunter worry what will happen to the community when wealthier residents start buying those units and the current public housing residents are moved into their new, denser buildings.
This is a home for people. You're taking away people's homes, what they consider home. I'm not talking about providing a shelter. I'm not providing a house. I'm talking about home. There are communities, generations of generations of people here that have been together, thriving together. And as much as they're like, oh, it's violence or it's unsafe or it's public housing, you know, it's communities. It's family. It's in the fabric.
In many ways, when I talk about Hope SF, I call it the nation's first large-scale reparations initiative.
Here's Theo Miller, director of Hope SF.
Like, we are unapologetically, intentionally trying to repair what decades of bad public policy has done on top of these communities.
Miller knows this isn't just about providing a new building.
In some ways, the city and county is like three generations late on this issue.
He also knows people in the community are skeptical.
I'm sorry, it's been a long time coming, and stay with me. And stay with us. And then as you look at the affordable housing bond that's on the ballot, where $150 million is set aside for your community, as you look at all these resources, still not enough, just know that we are trying to do our part to fulfill our promises.
But what about the widespread anxiety residents have about displacement?
You know, sometimes I'll go to community and like my young people, my kids will say, hey Theo, what's up Theo? Is it true they're building condos and they're gonna kick us out? No, we are not building condos and kicking people out.
Each resident coming from public housing has a right to return. It's in the city's administrative code.
And the only condition for them moving into a new unit is that they need to be in quote-unquote good standing.
What does that mean?
There's a new sheriff in town, right? You got to pay rent. You've got to be in compliance with your lease.
That includes following house rules and avoiding criminal activity.
And if families are having trouble with that, several things happen.
Miller says first, the property management has to check in with the family. And if need be, get them extra support through the mayor's office. Before, residents were supposed to get support from the housing authority. But now protections for these former public housing tenants lie with the mayor's office of housing and community development. He says any household that's received a 14-day notice comes across his desk.
And so no eviction, not one, no eviction should happen without the mayor's office being aware of it. We should be notified. We should be make sure that the supportive services have been provided. And families should have multiple chances to stay in that building.
1101 is just the beginning of Potrero's transformation. And the Hope SF team still has a lot of work to do to honor the community's history.
There's joy in people moving into high-quality housing, but there's tremendous loss. There's tremendous pain that a community that you called home for decades is no longer there. That the courtyards that you ran in, or the porch that you sat out on, or the open air that you had, the fact that you didn't have people on top of you or beneath you is gone, and there's loss to that.
The Potrero rebuild won't be done for at least another 10 years. There's a plan for how the roads will be straightened, which buildings will be built, and how it will all be paid for. But blocks will still be divided by income. Theo Miller says he welcomes resident feedback.
I don't get anxiety with residents who are concerned, and because they have a right to be concerned. But what it does is it just holds us accountable to do our job even better, which we try to do each and every single day.
For years, the developer Bridge has had community meetings once a month to keep Potrero Hill residents updated and to get their input. Bridge staff told me the input gets distilled into goals, and they try to meet those. But in the end, it comes down to budget. That means initial plans, like having a washer-dryer in every unit, don't always happen. I visit Harold Davis 2 months after his move into 1101.
Come on in. I was trying to do some more cleaning.
He's unpacked his bedroom, but there are still boxes on the floor of his main room. He's had more health problems, so settling in hasn't been his top priority. Though he hasn't been here long, he's already got some critiques.
Coming over here has done nothing but cost me money. Money that I really didn't have. In your bedrooms, okay, you have no lighting. So you have to go out and get some lamps.
Davis couldn't bring his old washer that he paid for himself because there's no hookup in the new unit. So now he has to pay for every load of laundry. And he has concerns about how some of the tenants are using the communal washers.
Oh, then she had some pine sol in a Hennessy bottle. And she poured that in the machine as well. So you never know what you're going to encounter within the, you know, the confines of the lunch room.
It may seem small, but tensions like these add up.
The irony in this for me is, okay, you are rushing people over in here and you've told people about all, you know, that this is where you're going and this is what you're going to have and dun 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 dun. And then we get over here and it's not anything like what we were told to me.
Most of his concerns are about safety. 1101 was supposed to have someone at the front to check you in when you arrive. But when I went to visit, there was no security.
You just got in here. Nobody really knew who in the hell you were. You could have been a killer.
Last month, Ben Carson, Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, came to Potrero Hill on a so-called fact-finding mission. HUD is the branch of the federal government that's continually cut funding to public housing. There were protesters and media crowding around 1101. Remember Lisa Gant, Davis's neighbor with no view and a positive outlook? I wanted her take on the shift away from federal money and toward private and city money for redevelopments like this.
For us to get this building is a wonderful thing. So if that's what you're asking me, yeah, we need this.
Yeah.
We have nowhere else to go. We can't afford this type of stuff. I don't want to leave San Francisco. And I have opportunities to leave San Francisco. And I don't want to leave because this is where everybody's trying to be. And I couldn't live, if it wasn't for this place, I couldn't afford to live in San Francisco. So this is great to me.
I asked her what the residents think of all the media and protesters at their new home.
Like they out here today, but they won't be out here no other day. They'll just be out here this one time. They need to be at the meetings and see what we talk about and see what's going on.
She's referring to a monthly meeting started by the residents of 1101 Connecticut. They discuss things like getting new security guards or how to entertain the neighborhood kids so they won't ride bikes in the hallways. That's because, despite the monthly meetings that Bridge and Hope SF held, there are issues on the ground that the developer and the city didn't anticipate. So the residents themselves are picking up the slack and inviting Bridge staff to attend. They're making space for their voices to be heard, at least by each other. In Potrero Hill, I'm Magnolia McKay for Cross Currents.
That was a KALW News original documentary about transforming public housing in Potrero Hill. Demolition to start phase two of the plan is scheduled for the first week of November. You can find that story and more on our website, kalw.org. That's also where you can subscribe to the Cross Currents newsletter. Tune in tomorrow at 5. A big data project helps shed light on the achievement gap for students here in the Bay and across the country.
When we look at our data, there's no school district in the United States out of the thousands and thousands that has even moderately high segregation that doesn't have a large achievement gap.
That's tomorrow at 5. And let's wrap it up with some local music. This is experimental cellist Teresa Wong from San Francisco. She's performing at the Jewish Contemporary Museum tomorrow night. Thank you. The Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Imran Ali Mullick, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega Welch, Truk Nguyen, and Joshua Sirotiak. Our engineers are James Rowlands, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.